tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 18th of June 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means it's Geopolitical Analysis Day, and who better to get our geopolitical analysis from than Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, thank God I'm doing well. There's been a helicopter flying around my neighborhood with this thing hanging from it. It looks like a big drill bit, but it turns out these are gas powered. This is saw. There are saws on it. They cut trees at the very high level. Very difficult to do. And but I saw it cut one tree over the course of 3 days. So he's just wandering around. I don't see him today, but it took me a while to figure out what that was. And I mentioned it on Pete's show, having no clue what it was. Then I realized it's, but he cut exactly one tree. So I don't know what the hell he's doing.
One tree in every 3 days. That's not really very productive of him, is it?
Well, what can we do?
Well, at least we're not tree surgeons ourselves. And I did think we might have been talking a little bit today about this Iranian deal that's gone on over in over between Trump and Iran that they managed to sort out in Pakistan. But I mean, we've talked about that a lot before, and we said that Iran basically won the war, and it's the same deal that you predicted it would be. That, America are going to have to get out of the Middle East, going to have to give them all their money back, and Iran gets the Strait of Hormuz. So Iran has increased its territory. But we're not actually going to be talking about that today, but we are going to be talking about a related subject. We're going to be talking about the integration between the Israeli and American militaries, and we're getting our notes here for today from responsiblestatecraft.org. Buried in the House's version of the 2027 National Defense Authorization Act, released on Tuesday, is section 224, entitled United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. The provision would arguably do more to intertwine the US military with the Israeli military than the billions and billions the US taxpayer has been forced to give the Israelis. Section 224 lays the groundwork for bilateral research and development, co-production of weapons, joint ventures, licensing agreements, and seemingly every manner of US-Israeli military-industrial complex cooperation. The US and Israel already work together heavily on missile defense, but this provision would greatly expand coordination to seemingly every area of defense tech, including AI, quantum, autonomous systems, directed energy, cyber, biotech, and many more. It also proposes network integration and data fusion. In other words, the US military's data could soon be the Israeli military's data. And you added there, I thought this was the case already. And yes, I think most of our listeners think that was the case already as well. If fully enacted, this proposal would provide a higher level of military-industrial integration than the US has with any other country in the world. To be sure, the US has worked closely with its NATO partners on co-production and shared supply chains, most notably via the Defense Production Action Plan. As the number one arms dealer in the world, the US provides weapons to militaries across the globe, but that is mostly a one-way street, with the US providing weapons to foreign buyers, who only occasionally make parts for those weapons themselves. And I think this mention here of NATO, this is what most people will be thinking. What's the difference here? What's the difference between what's going on already? And why is this a risk? Because America is already partnered with NATO, already has like these military partners, and it's got integrated weaponry with them. So what's the problem with our greatest ally, Israel, having an integrated military with NATO? Matt, what are the problems with this, and why is it different to the NATO integration that America already has?
I've been getting quite a bit of emails, people just losing it, talking about that it's going to be one military. And so I read the section. The section is actually quite modest, 224. But even though there's only a few words there, it says quite a bit. Let me give the rundown. The basic conception is that straight out aid, meaning cash going from one country to another, is going to be lessened. Instead, that money's going to go to actually building things together, joint ventures when it comes to weapons production or anything else. People think that, and I read AIPAC's page trying to refute that it's going to be integrated. But when you list these things, defense tech, AI, quantum, autonomous systems, all that, that is pretty much defense. Israeli generals are not going to be commanding American troops. They don't have to go that far. It says nothing like that in the piece. This has to do with procurement. This has to do with building weapons and setting foreign policy. Yeah, I thought it was the case already. I didn't know that there was data that the Israelis didn't have access to. So, and the National Defense Authorization Act, this is the military's budget. It came up to $1.5 trillion this year, which means it's more like $2 trillion because there's a lot in that section or outside of that section that's still military. The security agencies, foreign, international relations. There's a lot of stuff. Nuclear weapons are under the Department of Energy. So it's probably more like $2 trillion or more than that. So they buried this thing, and people are getting upset by it. So that's why I wanted to do this today. And there's a few guys on our side, thank God, that are saying to come down. It's bad, but not. So I don't think it changes a lot, except that. And this is, you got to remember, too, Israel has been devastated by this war. Iran won it. Iran has destroyed huge chunks of Israel, including the occupied territories, where hitting the settler, which I love very much, by the way, hitting the settler homes, because they're certainly not non-combatants. So rather than simply giving aid, this makes the two countries partners in building these kind of things. But AIPAC will say, well, it's only in these few areas. But these few areas are the core of building weaponry and their disposition. Data fusion. I have the feeling that data fusion means more than just data. But there's always been in the Pentagon a certain generals, certain admirals, a distrust of the Israelis. Now, they may have been purged. They're always being, the U.S. military is in chaos. Obama did this many years ago, and a huge purge of the military. I think it was like 250 were forcibly retired. There's Donald Trump under Hegseth. I don't know if it's that much, but there is a substantial number of the high command that's been purged. And those who have taken their place certainly will have no problem with this. And so as far as I can see right now, this is about procurement. This is about developing weapon systems. This is about technology. But that is a military fusion. So, and then we'll see. And the other problem is, as we'll see coming up, it strips away any kind of oversight that makes that relationship publicly accountable. You know, the aid budget, you can see this is going to be very different.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, one of the differences here, we're always hearing about how much European contributes to NATO, and they're supposed to contribute 5% of their GDP. And I think Britain is contributing 3% of its GDP or something like that, something ridiculous like that. Has there been anything said about Israel contributing any of its GDP towards this, or is this just, oh, it's just completely free? And Israel is clearly going to benefit from this because, as you're saying, they got depleted weapons, and America will just replete their weapons, I guess. And instead of having to get the money from Congress to do that, it will be seen as part of the money that's required for the American military anyway. So, I mean, is America charging Israel for this, or is this just seen as an equal partners thing?
No, I think they both profit. But, you know, this aid has been institutionalized, put it that way. Instead of just giving them cash, they just, you know, invest, the two countries that will invest together in something. And it makes sense from the Israeli point of view because, you know, Israel has been devastated. They need this. And Donald Trump, you know, is aware of this. And it's still making its way through the Congress as of right now. But I don't know who discovered the Section 224. I've read it myself. It says a lot in very few words. So, no, the Israelis will not be paying anything, not in a million years. But it is connected to the fact that the country has been devastated by the Iranians. You know, not just winning a war. I mean, they slaughtered. You know, those bases are not coming back, American bases, in the Gulf countries. The Gulf countries don't trust them anymore. And we're going to come under another attack again. So there's a few other issues concerning this we'll talk about here right now in a little bit.
Well, I should also clear up there. I said the European countries have to pay America to be part of NATO up to 5% of their GDP. That's what they have to spend on their military. And then, of course, then the military is all integrated with NATO. So effectively, to be part of NATO, you have to be spending, I think, 5% of your GDP on the military. I was just wondering if there was any like minimum amount that Israel had to pay for its military, but clearly not. Section 224 would be a different beast entirely. It would fuse the US and Israeli defense sectors in multiple areas vital to the battlefields of the future, like autonomous systems and cyber warfare. It would also bring extraordinary Israeli influence to the US beyond what it already has through the Israel lobby and its robust network of social media influencers. It would give the Israeli government the opportunity to greatly expand one of the most powerful levers of influence in US politics, jobs, by expanding or starting new production facilities like it already has in Mississippi and Arkansas. The Israeli government could boast of providing jobs on US soil, thereby securing allies among members of Congress who represent the districts where those jobs lie. This unprecedented level of military integration stands in stark contrast to the traditional aid model of defense cooperation, in which Israel already stood out as the top recipient of US military assistance, as laid out in a recent Quincy Institute brief authored by Stephen Simon. This shift from an aid model to a military integration model has troubling implications. Namely, the shift will strip away the political and diplomatic oversight mechanisms that make the relationship publicly accountable, moving it from a visible annual aid vote into the opaque machinery of defense acquisition, where oversight is limited and political accountability is minimal. The result would be a defense relationship that is simultaneously deeper and less transparent. This all comes at a time when the Israeli military has repeatedly used US weapons in strikes that have violated international humanitarian laws in Gaza. And as Israel has repeatedly violated ceasefires in the Trump administration's unnecessary war with Iran. This is another point about this new peace deal with Iran. How long do you think it will be before Israel start bombing Lebanon again? I am thinking it's going to be within a week. What is your guess, Matt?
Yeah, I have no problem with that guess. Remember, you know, the invasion of Lebanon, that, you know, part of this war, they didn't hit, you know, they tried to, they hit mostly civilian centers and the UN. They actually wiped out the UN presence in South Lebanon. And they're extremely upset by the fact that it's clear that, that Iran won, that Iran now has emerged as a major power. Rebuilding won't be that big of a deal. They'll have assistance from China and Russia, no doubt. Of course, Trump is not spinning it that way. He spins it a different way, just like in Afghanistan years ago. But, you know, it is what I predicted, as you said. It is a defeat in every way. And procurement was at the center of it. You know, the Ukraine war totally depleted U.S. Stores. So you add Israel to the mix later on, and there's not much left. Israel was completely without its interceptor missiles. The Gulf countries had nothing, and they were completely defenseless. And when the U.S. made a few more, they didn't go to Oman. They went to Israel. So that's destroyed that relationship, or at least in part. So, yeah, you know, using American weapons, yeah, we all know that. That's been going on for a very long time. But the key issue here is, yeah, that we could, you know, it's less opaque in this system than the old one because it's in private hands. You know, private companies make American military equipment. And so, you know, not that it mattered in the past very much, but we're going to have to go to the private sector to figure out what they're doing. And so this is a way to actually increase aid without alerting the public. And you know, Israel's reputation now has gone way down. I think I know this is off your question, but the relationship between Jews and Gentiles has changed in this country, and I think your country too. Remember, the American casualties are much higher than is being reported. I have many sources on this. You can't wipe out bases with, you know, 40,000 men on it and have no, you know, 100 people. It's definitely in the thousands. And that's just dead. And so, you know, this is something that people are aware of. The only reason this occurred is because of Israel, and therefore, you know, this is the first time this is so out in the open and publicly condemned by ordinary people who would never have condemned it before. I can't believe it, but it's true. So this is a reaction to that as well. Let's put it in the private sector so you can't really see. And even Trump could even say, well, our cash aid has gone down. He could act like he's you know, anti-Israel. You know, the aid has gone down. What are you talking about? No, it's gone up, but it's just been institutionalized with federal funds in the private sector.
Trump does seem to be not his usual self. I think looking at him after his birthday celebrations and looking at him signing this deal, he just sort of signed the deal and handed it over instead of, you know, doing the big signature and holding it up and holding a big press conference and showing it. It was just like, oh, that's done. I'd rather get that out the way, as if it was an embarrassment to him, which is quite right. It should be an embarrassment to him.
Yeah.
But as you say, I mean, it has woken the rest of the world up to just how under Israel's influence American policy is, just how under the thumb Donald Trump is. I mean, there's nobody that can deny that now. And this completely pointless war in Iran has cost lives, it's cost money, it's caused the price of everything to go up for the very people that voted Donald Trump into office in the first place. And I mean, he was voted in on a ticket, no more wars. And he went and did the one war that everybody had been trying to avoid for the last 20 years, because they knew what was going to happen at the end of it. The most ridiculous thing of all is he's saying, well, this is a big win because Iran is never going to have a nuclear weapon. Well, Iran has constantly said it doesn't want a nuclear weapon for the last 30 years.
So That's right.
Why do you have to go to war against them to get them to agree with you? They have been agreeing with you. This is it's just absolutely incredible. So, yeah, I think this is part of the response to that, is to hide the money that's going there, because there will be no longer be any oversight of it. And he can say, well, we're not actually giving Israel any more aid. Yes, but your military is integrated with them. So that's where the funds is going now. Well, the enormous gulf between what most Americans want and what the president is doing when it comes to Israel and what Congress is proposing here should not be ignored. Just 30% of respondents to a New York Times Siena poll from mid-May 2026 believe Trump made the right decision to go to war with Iran, with 64% saying it was wrong. An Institute for Global Affairs poll released in late May finding that just 16% say that United States should keep supplying Israel with weapons without new restrictions, 38% want to stop supplying weapons entirely, and another 24% want weapons conditional on how they are used. Though slowly, tides within both parties are shifting as more and more members speak out against the growing divide between Israel's actions and America's interests. For example, Senator Chris Van Hollen, Democrats, wrote in the New York Times on Tuesday that the Democratic Party has provided reflexive and unconditional support to Israeli governments, even as their actions have increasingly undermined American interests and values. On the Republican side of the aisle, Representative Thomas Massey, Republican, and former Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, also Republican, have openly decried the Israel lobby's corrosive influence, a stance that may have cost both of them their seats in Congress. Well, I think, didn't Marjorie Taylor Greene, she resigned, and Thomas Massey's just lost his re-election. But I mean, this doesn't really symbolize an earthquake, does it? You know, one member of the Democratic Party and two members of the Republican Party. I know it's a shock because normally there's unilateral support for Israel. So, I mean, it is a step in the right direction, but I mean, it's still only one representative, and they managed to get rid of him as well. I mean, it just shows you that they can't even tolerate there being just one politician that is against Israel and America. They have to have unilateral support amongst both parties. So what are your thoughts on this, Matt, and also this recent loss of the election of Representative Thomas Massey?
Well, Israel has, or AIPAC, has done this before. Many times before, you know, with a black congresswoman from Atlanta. I forget her name. She had the same thing done to her not that long ago.
Cynthia McKinney.
Cynthia McKinney, thank you. Exact same thing happened, because essentially the primary is the election there. There's no chance for Republican victory. And it was the precise thing. The millions came into the other guy. I can't think of his name. He's a Navy SEAL, I think. But we're living in a day. Well, this is the New York Times. This is a completely Jewish newspaper, allowing this to be said. I can't believe it. I'm living to see the day where this is permitted and is now mainstream, and they do have support from others. Marjorie Taylor Greene. These are fairly popular figures. Actually, no, they're very popular figures in the Republican Party. And I love the fact there's this battle between those who just, you know, want to be Israel's poodle against those who don't want any connection there, dragging the U.S. into wars. Now, other than this integration concept, what other elements, responses are the Israelis going to do to the fact that not only has the U.S. lost, Israelis, their country's devastated, their economy is absolutely devastated. I think they lost to out-migration. Israel lost about 1 million people, and they can't afford that. They're still fighting on numerous fronts. Their military is absolutely, IDF is exhausted. What they'll do in terms of lobbying in the future, how they're going to do damage control. The fact that this is being noted is extraordinary. And think, you know, this is what Israel's been doing for years and years and years and years. But it was Netanyahu that forced this into the public eye for the first time. And I say that because Netanyahu, his allies, the small parties, settler parties that he needed in order to have a majority in the Knesset, they don't like, you know, homosexuality, at least for Israel. They don't like the blacks coming over from Ethiopia. So liberal Jews in America were saying, what's wrong with him? How dare he act like? And so plus his attempt to neuter the judiciary, where we had about a million people protesting in Israel. And now the ultra-Orthodox in Jerusalem refusing to be drafted in huge numbers. The riot police are there right now. You know, this is, I can't believe I'm living to see the day where all of this taken together is occurring. And even Abu, not Abu Dhabi, Dubai has been devastated. That's where rich Jews were leaving to get out of Israel, to avoid the violence. I don't know where they're going now. I guess they're going to the U.S. or Europe. But they've lost a huge number of people. And but for the first time, saying something as simple as, you know, Israeli actions undermining American interests. I can't believe it. I can't believe that was uttered by anybody, and in the New York Times.
Yeah, so, it's surprising.
You know, this is a pure white pill.
Yeah, the truthfulness of it is surprising, as you say, from the New York Times as well. Amid widespread and growing public opposition to the Israeli genocide of Gaza and South Lebanon, a controversial new bill seeks to formally integrate the US and Israeli militaries like never before, making it difficult to tell where one ends and the other begins. Section 244 of the 2027 National Defense Authorization Act proposes to join the two forces together at the hip, laying the groundwork for extensive cooperation into seemingly every manner of US-Israeli military-industrial complex cooperation, according to the Institute for Responsible Statecraft. This includes the research, development, and production of modern high-tech arms, artificial intelligence, biotechnology, drones, directed energy, cyber and autonomous weapon systems. It would compel the United States to integrate Israeli arms and technologies into its defense supply chain and fuse the country's data capturing and storage facilities together, meaning that Israel could have access to essentially all the United States military's data. The bill also requires the creation of a new position within the Department of Defense, an executive agent whose role is to coordinate cooperation and integration between the two parties. This would dramatically change the relationship between the two states from one where Washington supplies Tel Aviv with money, weapons, and diplomatic support to a situation where the two are fundamentally intertwined. It would also make the relationship far less transparent, as aid to Israel currently requires an annual public debate and vote. However, by moving it away from the political realm into that of defense acquisition, oversight and accountability mechanisms will be removed and the public will have little right to know the details going forwards. Do you think it's going to change very much apart from that, apart from the fact that the public won't really know what's going on? Do you think much is actually going to change in the background, Matt? Or do you think it's pretty much the same is going to go on? It's just that the public won't know anything about it anymore.
Yeah. You know, the public knowing things doesn't make any difference. The Israelis are going to pursue their interests no matter what. Jews are so powerful that they can actually get away with that stuff. Although that's thinning right now. I'd forgotten about the new position, the executive agent. I can't wait to see who fills that role. And that's sort of like the government liaison between private parties and Israel and the U.S., Israeli and American companies. You remember reading about when the EU was first being formed after World War II. It was called the Coal and Steel Community. Coal and steel, that was it. And people were complaining, saying it's going to be, you know, one, you know, national sovereignty is going to be destroyed. They said, oh, it's just coal and steel. But coal and steel are so fundamental that it did destroy sovereignty. And then, of course, the EU came after that, or the EC came after that, and the EU came after that. And this is what they do. This is just a first step. This is like the coal and steel community. If you go to AIPAC's page where they try to defend this, they're making the same arguments. Well, it's just a few areas of procurement. What's the big deal? But that is military policy. That is the defense industry. You know, and it's not just a few areas. And that's how the Israelis are trying to spin this right now. And even among Jews, I don't think that they have that's taken seriously by a lot of people. It's huge by the simple fact that this became a public issue, not just among us, but in public. And because of that, that's why they're doing this. They're making it, you know, completely outside of public oversight, which means because I know they're getting less and less and less popular. Everyone knows what they did in Gaza. They slaughtered children. They slaughtered women. You know, they destroyed the hospitals. They destroyed the hospitals in South Lebanon, too, or in Beirut. That's their first target. They're using precision weapons. There's no accidents here. But they'll say that Hamas was in the basement making weapons or something like that. These are terror tactics. And unfortunately, terrorism has become standardized. It's the norm in both countries' policy, Ukraine as well. So, you know, it goes from this one-way street in terms of aid, you know, pouring cash into Israel, settlers never having to work, all that kind of thing. And now it's been institutionalized. That's really the big deal. So we have to start looking to the private sector. That's the important thing. Moving away from the political realm into that of defense acquisition, well, that's the private sector. And that is no accident here. And this, what we're reading here, this is from the UNS review. You know, it reminds me of the coal and steel community. They're saying, oh, that's just that. No, that's fundamental. Everything comes from that, from those two things. In terms of production. And of course, they were right. And this reminds me of that quite a bit.
So it might be a time in the future when it's the United States of Israel and America, possibly. Well, judging by its sponsors, Section 224 has strong support on Capitol Hill. It was put forward by Mike Rogers, Republican, Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, and Adrian Smith, Democrat, the panel's highest-ranking Democrat. In late May, Representative Ro Khanna's effort to revoke the provision from the massive military funding bill failed, paving the way for the NDAA to advance to a full House vote. The news that a new bill could essentially fuse together the US and Israeli militaries has been met with pushback online, but provoked little comment in Washington, D.C., Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massey famously spoke up, who has promised to offer an amendment to strip Section 224 from the bill on the House floor. "We are a sovereign country," he said recently. Massey, a strong critic of U.S. support for Israel, recently lost his primary to challenger Ed Gollrain after AIPAC and other Israel lobby groups flooded the race with tens of millions of dollars, making it the most expensive contest in American history. Analysts have noted that if passed, the bill will extraordinarily expand Israeli influence in domestic American politics, giving Tel Aviv the opportunity to pull powerful political levers through the tried and tested method of offering jobs. The US already provides Israel with enormous amounts of military aid, having sent hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons, among other things, since 1948. Since 2008, it is required by law to protect Israel's qualitative military edge by supplying it with advanced weaponry. Section 224, however, would transform and deepen this relationship, making it all but impossible to democratically break the US-Israel special relationship. And this is the first I've heard of that. I didn't realize there was a law saying that they had to protect Israel's qualitative military edge. I mean, that's basically saying they have to make sure that Israel has the edge over everybody else militarily. And I mean, who funds that? America has to fund that. So America's basically funding Israel's military all this time. And that's not going to change now. It's just we're going to know less about it. Did you know, Matt, that America had to, by law, protect Israel's qualitative military edge?
In fact, I did. And, you know, 2008, you know, things have changed radically. I think that was kind of an unspoken conception prior to that. But the U.S. now has fallen behind. And now that Turkey has turned against Israel entirely, that's going to be impossible to maintain. Because, you know, look, the qualitative edge over the last, you know, decade has been to make sure that Israel's enemies are poor and divided. Therefore, they had to destroy, you know, popular leaders like Gaddafi or Assad. You know, it's no accident that these countries were all on the cusp of first world status. You know, tremendous growth and everything else that terrified Israel. Not really about weapons. It's just that they're becoming, you know, an advanced country, advanced population, well-educated and the rest of it. So they had to be destroyed, and then making sure that the guerrilla groups, there's still no government in Israel, in Syria right now. They failed to do that in Iran. I wrote a paper on the downing of the Arrow Air flight back in 1985, killing 250 American soldiers. There was no investigation. I think that has something to do with the Camp David Accords and the fact that the U.S. would not use nuclear weapons against Iraq. Long story there. If you haven't seen my article and my discussion on that, you should. No one's talking about it. It was like the U.S. Liberty for the 80s, USS Liberty for the 80s. But even more people were killed. No investigation. 250 soldiers killed. No investigation, or absolutely minimal investigation. That screams, the very fact that no one's heard of it screams that the Israelis did it. I'm convinced of it. That's why I have a paper explaining in detail why, how is it, the Israelis did it. So required by law, well, it may be impossible. The U.S. is struggling in every way. The U.S. is deindustrialized. Remember, the American military supply chain is all over the world. And this is extremely significant. I don't know. The U.S. doesn't have a qualitative military edge anymore, let alone Israel. So it's simply impossible. They can't fulfill that. The only way that they can do it is by making Israel's enemies poor and starving.
So rather than increasing their own technical expertise with their own weaponry, they subvert their enemies so that they can't afford to increase their weapons. That sort of technique is what they'll use. That alliance is under increased scrutiny as support for Israel is collapsing across the United States. A new poll published by Israel's Institute for National Security Studies found that 60% of Americans, including 75% of respondents under 30 years old, hold a negative view of the country. When asked, a large plurality says that Israel holds too much sway over American politics and politicians. A 2025 study found that half of American voters believe Israel is carrying out a genocide against its neighbors in West Asia. The International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, among others, on charges of crimes against humanity. The United States, however, has refused to accept the ICC's actions, attempted to shut down proceedings, and imposed sanctions on the court. ICC prosecutor Karim Khan stated that Senator Lindsey Graham told him that his court is only for African thugs like Putin, Russian President Vladimir Putin. It is not for democracies like Israel and the USA. The response from the governments of Israel and the US to the increasing opposition to the genocide has been to crack down on dissent and to censor social media. We have a pro-Palestinian group that have just been declared a terrorist organization in Britain as well, Palestine Action. So they are cracking down on the left here over this. They really are. As Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, stated, we really have a TikTok problem, a Gen Z problem. The Trump administration forced through the sale of TikTok to the family of Larry Ellison, a passionately pro-Israel tech billionaire who is the largest private funder of the Israeli Defense Forces. Ellison, no doubt, will support Section 224. Yet the effective merger between the US military and the IDF will have profound consequences for the future of America and should provoke stiff opposition nationwide. Whether it passes will depend largely on the nature and scale of that opposition. That mention there of the TikTok sale, I don't think enough gets talked about as far as that is concerned. I mean, they literally forced China to give up TikTok, and then so that America could then put it in the hands of this pro-Zionist Jewish guy, American, I suspect, with a double citizenship, probably Israeli citizen as well as an American citizen. And of course, the reason why he's got it is because he wants to prevent criticism of Israel, which will all come under the heading of anti-Semitism, as far as he's concerned. I mean, that's just incredible to strong arm another country into by saying we're not going to allow you to have your social media network in our country anymore unless you sell it to this Jew. I mean, it's just incredible that they've done that. And I mean, people talk about what Israel's doing in Lebanon and in Palestine. But I mean, strong arming an entire country like China to hand over their largest social network, not to the American government, but to a Jew. I mean, it's just incredible. And over here, of course, in Britain as well, they're talking about, or they've said they're going to ban social media entirely for everybody under the age of 16. You know, they've got a real problem with social media because the truth is bubbling to the surface on social media. Doesn't matter which platform you're on. I suspect it will still bubble to the surface on TikTok, regardless of the fact of whether it has a Jew in charge of it or not. I mean, if you look at Twitter, even before Elon Musk took over on Twitter, the truth was still coming through on Twitter. It might be coming through more now that Elon Musk is in control. But before then, people were still talking about these issues and Jews were not happy about it. Jonathan Greenblatt was not happy about it. So it will still happen on TikTok. But I still find it shocking that actually happened. And I don't think enough gets mentioned about it. Of course, we're not concentrating on that today. We're concentrating on this integration. Matt, what are your final thoughts on the integration? And also, have you got any thoughts on that TikTok sale that I found particularly egregious?
Yes, it is egregious. The U.S. had to give something to China. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, though. But, you know, so much for the free market, huh? But this comment by Lindsey Graham, African thugs like Putin, it's an oddity there. And he got away with it, as far as I can see. I checked it. It is a legitimate quote. He's an African thug, according to him.
Well, hang on, Matt. If I could just interject there. I mean, doesn't that really show that Lindsey Graham has a sense of humor? And I mean, I'm also surprised that he's insulting African people like that by saying that Putin is like an African thug. Do you know what I mean? Is that not like a racist comment that he made there?
Yeah. And he got away with that, as far as I know, which shows you the nature of the bias. It's just a weird thing to say. But yeah, this is a merger in terms of procurement and production. But that is military policy. So, like the Quincy Institute says something like, the annual aid vote is a big deal. Everyone debates it. People are against it, you know. And now these decisions are going to be made at the private sector level that will attract very little attention. I don't think that's the case. Now, the ICC, I don't care about at all. And saying that we have a TikTok problem is, I think they're right. I think the younger generation My son's generation, for example, is very, very different than your typical boomer in terms of their view on Israel and everything else. And the most outrageous part of all of this is now Donald Trump can get up in front of people and say, Israel receives no more American assistance. America first. You know, and but when it comes to foreign aid, those debates, Israel will not be a part of it. You know, it's very significant. But the very fact that this is being debated, this is being discussed, that, you know, the fact that U.S. and Israeli policies contradict each other, that the U.S. is being dragged into war, that, you know, 20 years ago, that was out of the question. Whoever would utter that would be absolutely destroyed. And, yeah, they got rid of Thomas Massie and stuff like that, but, you know, and they're passing all kinds of anti-Semitism laws on university campuses. Actually, we talked about that in his first term. It is just, it's to be expected. But stuff like that doesn't come from a position of strength. Now that the Iranians have won that war and Israel is in ashes in certain parts, you know, nothing's going to be the same again. My concern now, I know this is off the topic a little bit, but getting a true casualty number, because the U.S. is going to lie about it. I'm going to have to go, you know, I usually go to the Russians for that. And they usually have a decent a number that makes sense. You know, the U.S. simply doesn't have the power to take on a country like that anymore. You know, it used to be in 1990, Operation Desert Shield. The U.S. can't do that anymore. They don't have that ability. So, and now they've lost Turkey. Inconceivable 20 years ago. Losing Turkey, you know, dropping out of NATO is not out of the question for that country. The most powerful country in that organization, except for the U.S. The U.S. depended on Turkey for its, you know, as an anchor for foreign policy in the Middle East. They don't have it anymore. So they have to go to the Gulf countries. And they, you know, are very iffy about it because they've been bombed because of American bases there. And the UAE at some point gave the U.S. 48 hours to clear out. Well, they got cleared out by force. The Saudis, you know, I think now they're going to want to reach out to the Iranians. And again, I predicted all this, Europe and China and Russia. You know, the Chinese had a ship, a signaling ship, giving all of the locations of everything to the Iranian military, especially the guard. And nothing was happened. Nothing happened to it. The U.S. knew it didn't have the capacity to do anything about it. They're lying through their teeth about the aircraft carriers. You know, yeah, there was no fire in the kitchen. They were knocked out by Iranian missiles that are designed for that. My God, I mean, everything has changed because of this war. And Donald Trump's presidency has been completely destroyed.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about it is, you know, the harm that it's done to populism. I mean, it could be positive. You could end up with proper ethno-nationalist parties now. But, I mean, politicians are moving closer to ethno-nationalist talking points all the time over here in Britain with restore and reform. So, it could end up being a good thing in the end that Trump has destroyed his presidency. It's also a good thing that this is showing in the New York Times as well, and the fact that people are asking questions about this. So many people have been asking questions about it. As you were saying, AIPAC have been forced to release a statement about it. I mean, that wouldn't have happened a few years back. Certainly living in interesting times, Matt. Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.